You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Surf Life Saving Northern Region is raising concerns about their capacity to continue providing the service that they do. Northern Region covers beaches from Northland through Auckland and Waikato. It is the biggest region of the surf life saving regions in New Zealand. Last summer, headcounts at peak times in this region increased by 46% in comparison with a 5-year average and sat at 500,000 people daily. Lifeguards in the region spent 83,491 hours patrolling. They undertook 652 rescues and conducted 771 first aid treatments. Lifeguards took part in 155 searches and completed 37,663 preventative actions, which intervened and ensured the safety of 127,684 people. These stats are available on their website, and careful documentation of this information is made throughout the season to show what kind of work is involved and the scale of it. Matt Williams is the Chief Executive of Surf Life Saving Northern Region, and he is saying that the service is running like a small business and it is not sustainable. The organisation is hoping central government will get involved. I spoke with Matt about the issues they are facing.
So for the past years there's been increasing press coverage on the changing work surf lifesavers do. And everyone knows they can come to New Zealand's patrolled beaches. They'll see the sight of the lifeguards in their red and yellow, but their scope's been increasing, and it's gone from just patrolling between the flags, providing a rescue service, to much, much more. Farmers coming off their quad bikes in nearby land, vehicle accidents, horses falling over and breaking victims' legs, body recoveries, search and rescues in nearby bush, all increasing work, all that we're responding to well, but it's putting increased pressures on the organisation. And the real difficulty is that these increased pressures are coming at a time where we're struggling to meet our current costs. So challenges all around in that sense. And what we're really looking to do is raise awareness with the public of the work we're doing and the need for increased levels of support. We've got a great family of funders who currently support us, but even when they're funding at their limit, it's not enough to continue the level of service going forward. I think it's really important, or that New Zealanders would be upset, if they didn't have that current level of service they're seeing at the beaches going forward, because it's going to mean less enjoyment for them at the beach, a less safe beach environment, and sadly, in my opinion, ultimately, I think it's going to lead to more drownings in the future.
Okay, first of all, what is the role of a surf lifeguard?
That's a very interesting question. And if we said, what's the tacit public expectation of a lifeguard? I think they'd say it's a Swiss Army knife at the beach. Your kid stands on a piece of glass, who are you going to go see? Your kid gets lost near the beach, you need to use a phone. You know, you're suffering from dehydration. None of that has anything to do with drowning at the beach. And what we have is the center, the beach, where a huge amount of the population loves to recreate during the summer. It's great and it's free, but there's no revenue derived from using that service, but there's only one group who's providing all of the assistance here, and that's surf lifesaving. And it's a little bit like the tragedy of the commons, because everybody's using us, but no one's really supporting us. So yes, we could stand on the side of the road with a bucket and shake money and get coins, but it's not the kind of support an organisation of our level requires.
Do you think that the public knows how, you know, lifeguards function in terms of money or resources or where they get their financial support from?
No, I think that's very unclear to the public. You know, most of them believe we're supported by central government. That's not actually the case. A lot of them think we derive income from our services, that we actually get money for it, but we don't. You know, all of our work is done for free. No one pays us to be on those beaches, and not only do we provide the service for free with the volunteers, we also do the work to have that huge underlying cost, provide that cost for the surf clubs. 17 of them in the northern region, you know, that 17 million there, all of the capital equipment that we use, the rescue boats, the rescue watercraft, the first aid equipment, all of the work to find that money is done by ourselves, cap in hand, support year to year.
So how does the funding actually work, if you can break it down?
All right, so to look at it simply, we have all of the funding we get is donations or grants or requests from us. So we go and ask people to give us for that money. It's not like your standard business where you sell something, you have a contract for service. And those people, in inverted commas, we ask are largely the councils, territorial local authorities, so Northland Regional Council, Auckland Council, and Waikato Regional Council. And for the most part, their level of support that they provide is to provide us with the funds to put the lifeguards on the beaches on the Monday to Fridays of the summers. They're referred to as paid lifeguards because they're getting income for that work because they're having to work Monday to Friday. You can't have volunteers do it. And that's a very large cost center for us because you've got 24 patrol locations which need to have lifeguards on it while people are using the beach over that Christmas holiday period. Then we have what we term our funders, and those are the guys we go out to and we ask for donations. So we'll write an appeal or a case to them and along the lines of, Murawai Surf Club needs a new rescue boat, or we need to put in a new radio network so our lifeguards can communicate with each other and with the Surfcom Centre. And these are the philanthropic funders who provide that kind of funding for us. It's all tagged funding and it has to go towards a specific purpose. Similar to that is our gaming funding, which comes from the gaming machines. And then we have our partners in sponsorships, the likes of Toyota Financial Services, who provide us goods in kind or funds to deliver our service as a corporate partner. And the last one is the donations, and that's what's been declining rapidly. And that's money that the public gives to us or gifts to us because of the good work that we do.
So essentially you're saying that what you receive currently isn't enough at the moment.
Correct. So it's been a bit of a catch cry for us. We've seen it coming for the last 2 to 3 years that we know the cost of providing the service is increasing. So it's costing us more to do the same thing each year. And because that income hasn't increased, we've used our reserves to fund those increases in the past few years, but we can't continue doing that because those reserves are going to track to zero. So now what we're saying is we need to engage in this conversation urgently, because if we are to continue on this current trend, our only option is to provide less service to reduce that overall cost. But if we reduce that service, it's going to change the experience that we have on our beaches.
I'm going to come back to that, but I just want to ask, why doesn't the central government already pay?
That's a very good question, and I think the fair answer would be is we haven't engaged with them yet. Surf Life Saving hasn't been to them as an organisation and worked with them on that. And you can see how bad the fit is, I think, in my opinion. We sit under sport and recreation. We're an emergency service. You know, we save lives.
So the actual category that you're under, isn't Surf Life Saving more similar to, say, the ambulance or firefighting?
I'd agree with that, yep. But we sit under sport and recreation. Yes, we enable New Zealanders to recreate, but we don't fit any of their outputs. The key things that you'd want from sport and recreation, we don't do that. We save lives.
So in terms of what you do deal with at the beach, what are some things that you would like to pass on to people?
I think the key message is the lifeguards are going to be there again this summer. So some of those reports have alluded to there being reductions in services this season. That's not going to be the case, and the lifeguards will be there this summer on the beaches. And I think any time we have coverage, it's always important to remind the public how best to stay safe at the beach. And there's the flagged areas. We always recommend swimming between the flagged areas, especially at an unfamiliar beach. Know your limits, guys. To our male listeners out there, 17 to 35 years old, you guys are overrepresented in your drowning stats. And it seems that we don't quite know our own skill limits or the risk that's in the water. And you put those things together and you have a lot of guys needlessly getting into trouble. And the other thing is, if you spot someone in trouble and there isn't lifeguards on duty or nearby, don't try to help them yourself. Dial 111 and ask for police. And one of the saddest things we've seen in recent history is those going to assist their friends, and it turns one drowning or one rescue into two. So please dial 111 and ask for police.
You mentioned reductions. Okay, so if this continues, or if this way of what you call it unsustainable funding, right? So if this continues, you're saying that there will be a reduction of services in terms of, I mean, climate change, right? In terms of environmental pressures, that sort of thing, isn't a reduction of services a good thing? If we're talking a lesser pressure on the beach, given that lifeguards, people, whoever is at the beach is putting pressure on those areas, what if a lesser population on the beach, is that a good thing?
Yep, no, I understand your point. So there's things like housing on the beaches, coastal erosion, overfishing, pollution of those beaches, I think all of those are significant to global climate change. People using the beach and recreation, I think that's going to actually create awareness about how important our natural environment is. So I don't think the two are linked. I don't think the more people that use the beach is going to have any dramatic effect on global climate change. I think it'll have a positive effect because it makes them value that beach landscape more. But as to your point around the reductions in services, what we know is that people will swim at the beach anyway. So if the lifeguards aren't there, the majority are going to swim at the beach. What's going to change is we won't be there to save them when they get into trouble. And that's what we really want to make sure. You know, we'll still continue educating the public. We'll still make sure they know those beach safety messages. But it's absolutely vital that we're there when they get into trouble, that ambulance at the bottom of the cliff to ensure that they do get back out of the water alive.
And so you're saying lifeguards are necessary. How many drownings have there been between the flags?
Zero drownings between the flags in our history.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.